The world's great religions have always told a story about a beginning, a middle, and an end. But the end of times in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam tell very different tales. Martin Marty is one of America's leading theologians. He taught for years at the University of Chicago. Marty told Steve Paulson that the rapture, popularized recently in the Christian series Left Behind, is a fairly recent concept.
You won't find that word in 18 centuries of Christian language. It's not in the Bible. It just isn't there. The best we can trace it is, using my thesis that fundamentalisms are very modern, a woman named Margaret MacDonald in a little cottage in Glasgow, Scotland, has visions and reads about them and compares and gets out mathematics and figures out when the world will end and that it will be done through this rapture.
When was she?
1840s. Major figures, John Darby, not a well-known figure in America, but a major thinker of that, and John Irving. They don't credit her, but it's growing up in the same soil. Developed this, including much more elaborate biblical studies. We got it because Dwight Moody, the top American evangelist for a half century, commuted over there and picked up things from Darby and Irving and brought it here and started proclaiming it at conferences, and the Moody Bible Institute came along. It was generating, and it's done at the time when there are big battles over creation, how the world got started, evolution, and progressivism, which they hated, because progressivism and optimism said, as the world goes on, science and reason will do better and better, and we'll create a good new world. And that contradicted their vision of a changing world that they weren't controlling anymore, and it contradicted the theme in the Bible that there will be hard times coming, and then Jesus will rescue it.
So the basic scenario in the rapture is that there will be some sort of Armageddon where most people will be wiped off the earth, but Jesus will descend from the heavens.
Jesus will descend, and the rapture will take his saints up with him. There are three or four different versions of it, but it's that kind of plot. And there will be a battle of Armageddon, yes, and most people will be vanquished, and the saints will live, and Jesus will rule for 1,000 years. Again, you might get prefigurings of that among mystics and dreamers and wild people, but there was no church-wide program of this. This is the very time when fundamentalism is getting formed, and these forces all come together and becomes a major, major theme. Suddenly you have a way of explaining a world that you aren't running and don't like. Suddenly you have a way of saying, we are the pure group and they're the impure, etc. We can make sense of the newspapers and they can't. Jesus prophesied that there'll be wars and rumors of war and men's heart failing for fear. Look out the window, there's World War I and it's all happening. Curiously, William Jennings Bryan, the most notable layperson as a fundamentalist, had been a pacifist Secretary of State just before World War I. And then he saw all the upheaval, all the meaninglessness of all that. He's looking for another plot, and he becomes identified with them along the way. Kind of a loose cannon in it because he didn't agree with everything they did, but he was their champion. And there it lay again. Nobody paid a lot of attention to it for some time. And then the birth of Israel was a very big part of it.
A big part of it for Christians.
Yes. Yeah, much more than for Jews. The really Orthodox Jews don't believe that Israel is a fulfillment of prophecy. You have to wait for the Messiah to come. So that the people that Americans see as most Orthodox Jews, the Haredim, the people wearing the black beards and the black outfits and so on, they're not technically fundamentalists and they're not technically second coming people, though Messiah will come and then there would be an Israel. So it's mainly Christians, and that's a big power. Israel likes it that they are there. Some of the governments of Israel have really made use of them along the way. Well, now, how do we make the leap from belief in the end of the world and so on to connecting it to the birth of Israel? And that's an American story. It's not an Israeli story. There was Christian Zionism before there was Jewish Zionism. And when people say it was this fundamentalist movement about Israel being key to the coming of Christ invented in Jerusalem, I say, no, it was invented in Oak Park, Illinois. That is a very successful, devout business person. I think he was in insurance. William E. Blackstone came under the influence of some of these people, heard about a church, started teaching it, and it caught on. And pretty soon he had powerful people. President Harrison, Supreme Court justices, signed a memorial or petition that there should be a birth of Israel. Now, a lot of people, I don't think President Harrison had the faintest idea what's going on here, but it seemed like a nice thing because Americans are very friendly to Jews and Israel, and let it happen. But then at the time of World War I, they got a new round of it. And then after the war, Balfour Declaration and so on, the soil is ready, and there's a whole new round of this, and you reorganize, and you have a new memorial, and then comes the birth of Israel. Now, to the Islamic fundamentalists, this ruins the whole plot, because somebody has taken Islam down. As far as Islam is concerned, militant Islam. Mm-hmm. This was our territory. Palestinians were Arab Muslims, and the West, Christians and Jews, came in and planted here. And that's why radical fundamentalists in that world, including presidents of some states, say, we have to wipe Israel off the map. We have to drive them into the sea.
Well, is there a comparable end-time scenario in Islam?
Islam has end-time scenario, yes. But I don't think they're as motivated by that. In this form of Christianity, you're motivated by the fact that you have insider knowledge of when and how, not exactly when, but the signs are all there, and that you are to be its instruments and so on. In Islam, Allah is the instrument, and it's leading you to some sort of future. Islam is much more interested in purging Islamdom of the outsider who came in, because all visions of the Islamic future have the world coming to the same view. We hear it very recently, some of the debates about how you have to get rid of the West, you have to get the Jews down, so that these, in Shiite Islam, the 12th Imam comes and it's all fulfilled.
But what you're saying, particularly regarding Christian attitudes about the state of Israel, is it helps to explain why the volatility in Israel is so loaded. I mean, once you inject these end-time scenarios, and on top of the political unrest as well, I mean, there's a real pot that's brewing there, a volatile pot.
Oh, yes. It's a very scary kind of thing. Now, most Jews in Israel don't believe this scenario. There are a few in little messianic movements, Jews for Jesus in America, types like that. The vast majority of Jews in Israel are secular. I would speak at Hillel Foundation at Jerusalem, and if I would ask how many of you think that the God of Israel gave Israel exactly these boundaries, they'd say, who are you talking about? The God of Israel was not big to them. The land was very important. At noon hour, they're out digging in the caves. They love Israel. If they're at all religious, they like that. But they don't think it's Christians that say these are the boundaries that have to be. And then along comes some Jewish fundamentalisms. Gush Emunim is particular, a small movement, but they were coalescent with them. But then you have leadership that says, where does the money come from? One American group has raised hundreds of millions of dollars among our fundamentalists to support Israel.
Who do they give the money to?
Well, the government and agencies and so on. And it works through politics. Tom DeLay, a member of this outlook, said, since the Bible has told us this is how it has to be, and there must be an Israel for Jesus to come again, we will back Ariel Sharon no matter what he wants, because he is God's current custodian of that promise. Now, Sharon less so. Begin played right into it. He would give awards to American fundamentalists and vice versa. And when you confront them, they'll always say, well, don't we all have to make strange compromises? So we have to hold our nose. Here's a group that believes that when Jesus comes again, we'll all either be killed or converted. And that's not our scenario.
But right, because, not, I mean, it doesn't really match up because, I mean, the Christians don't really want God to come and save all the Jews, I would presume.
They're not part of Act 3. They're part of Act 1. And I think the Jews who accept this know that, but they will say, look, we're talking survival, and if this is how it has to come, we'll do it. And so they've developed friendly relations very often. And you have movements in America that, well, one of the prophecies says there has to be a sacrifice of a red heifer on the mount of the temple. So there's some people in Texas that are breeding until they can get a red heifer, so they have that ready. There's just all kinds of scenarios like this, which is not what Israel believes, but here's where the support comes from and the money comes from.
This is really pretty scary, isn't it? I mean, once you throw nuclear weapons into the equation and some leaders in the Middle East who, don't always seem to be the most reliable in the world. We really need to take this seriously, don't we?
Yeah, I find it very scary. What I try to do in my own work, first of all, I tend to be a kind of a moderate scholar, and I'm not an agitator, so I'm not saying get out in the streets and fight this. But as a teacher, I try to frame it in such a way that we do our own thinking about what this can mean. Because when you tie the politics, the land, and religion, you get a very volatile kind of mix. And in an era now when we have so many firebrands on all sides, you could get any kind of nut. I mean, some of the biggest setbacks we've had in Israel have come through a murder of a rabbin or a murder in the Al-Aqsa Mosque or something like that. You can see how close we come at such times. It's very hard to cool people off. If the Pope can say something that offends them and people even get killed, you could see what it'd be when you get to that sacred center of things. So yes, it's extremely volatile, and I think it makes it harder to deal with the reality of the survival and defense of Israel, because this means that all the enemies of Israel will identify every positive move as part of what the great Satan is doing.
Martin Marty is one of the country's leading theologians. Marty taught for decades at the University of Chicago Divinity School.